All right, we're in this morning. We got one more thing to do before we get in there. It's somebody's birthday today. It's Laura's birthday. She is 21. So we gotta sing happy birthday. Ready? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Laura. Happy birthday to you. All right, yes, happy birthday. We're in Luke, like I said, Luke chapter 8 is where we are. Just going through, been going through Luke on these Sunday mornings, and it makes it where you just deal with whatever you're dealing with in the book. So Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 40, this is about a resurrection. Luke chapter 8, verse 40, it's about life meeting death. It's one of the things that Jesus Christ does during his ministry. And this is a very high-ranking official, at least a religious official that meets Jesus Christ. His name is Jairus. And his daughter is sick. And while these crowds are following the Lord Jesus Christ, his daughter, he's trying to get Jesus to come home, come to his house and help his daughter. But while the crowds are all after Jesus and other things are going on, his daughter dies in the process, sounds like. And so this is, but that's not the end of the story. It's not just he dies and then the story's over. One of the things that Jesus Christ does throughout his earthly ministry, it's no wonder we're still reading about and learning about a man named Jesus Christ here 2,000 years and have all these details about his life because he did things like we're about to read. I mean, he healed the sick and raised the dead a couple times, and then, of course, he himself came out of a tomb. But let's read these verses, and I want to give you a little bit about resurrection faith. You know, this is the assurance, really. This is the thing. The resurrection from the dead is something that is, it is something unique in Christianity, and it is something that I don't think there's no other religious founder of any religion that's ever done anything like this. And so this is the power of Christianity. It's the truth. And so you always find that the Spirit is more powerful than the flesh, and that's stated all through the Bible. It's Proverbs. It's just a matter of life. But let's read these verses. Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 40. You remember the Lord Jesus Christ has just cast out these devils from this man, this homeless man, and the man is now was not in his right mind and sitting and clothed and all that kind of thing, and moved back into town, became a human being again. And so the Lord tells him to go tell the people that he's around what great things God's done for you. And so that's what the man does. And this is what happens. The Lord then goes to the other side of the sea, to the other cities on the other side. The Bible says in verse 40, came to pass that when Jesus was returned, the people gladly received him, for they were all waiting for him. Behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was the ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. All right, that's where that part of the story ends, and then something else happens. He gets interrupted by a lady with an issue of blood. And she's got this disease, and she's just trying to grab onto Jesus' clothes, and so she does. And then Jesus perceives that virtue's gone out of him, and he stops, and he looks around and tries to figure out who did that. And that's the story we'll talk about next week. this story with Jairus, he tries to get Jesus Christ to come to his house to help his daughter. And now we pick back up in verse 49. While he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, "Thy daughter is dead, trouble not the master." Pretty harsh and troubling words there. But when Jesus heard it, he answered him, saying, "Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole." When he came into the house, he suffered no man to go in save Peter, James, and John, and the mother of the maiden. And all wept, bewailed her, but he said, "Weep not, she's not dead, but sleepeth." And they laughed him to scorn, knowing that she was dead. And he put them all out, took her by the hand, called, saying, "Maid, arise." Her spirit came again, she arose straightway, and he commanded to give her meat. And her parents were astonished, but he charged them that they should tell no man what was done. That is one of the weirdest responses to all of this. But we'll talk about it when we get to it. But he just got through telling a man, go tell everything that God's done for you. Now he does this. This is a resurrection from the dead. And he tells the family and those in the room, don't tell anybody what's happened. Interesting. But let's deal with this resurrection faith. So first of all, I want us to think about this approach to God, the way Jairus approaches the Lord Jesus Christ. I think many people come to Jesus Christ because of their kids. It's not bad. You know, I used to be kind of hard on all that stuff, but you know, people come to Jesus Christ because of their kids, and a lot of people do that. People do that in the Bible. They do that. Do that in, you know, life. And so people come to Jesus Christ because of their kids, just like Jairus does. And so there's this crowd around Jesus Christ, and Jairus is like, there's a couple things noted about his life. He's a leader in the synagogue. So this guy has a position, he has a title. He's got some authority there. And there's a crowd around Jesus Christ, but I notice in all of this, not everybody seems to get the attention that a couple of people get. Like, not everyone in the crowd gets personally addressed by Jesus Christ. Jairus gets addressed by Jesus Christ, and this lady with the issue of blood gets addressed. But the crowd generally just doesn't get the personal attention that, you know, I know we like to think and say things like Jesus is, he's always listening and paying attention, but I want you to think of it from the other side of this, that there is an approach to God that actually gets God's attention personally. And so I want you to notice this and think about these things, because this is reality. This is the way God interacts with people, and you see it in Jesus Christ. So you got a crowd around Jesus Christ. Not everybody is being addressed personally. They're just sort of around him. And the Bible talks about they're thronging him. I mean, it's just like this mob of people. A couple things with Jairus in thinking about an approach to God that really gets results. What's an approach to God that gets results? What makes Jairus important to Jesus Christ? What makes the woman with the issue of blood important to Jesus Christ in a way that the crowd isn't important to him? What is their approach? I see Jairus as he's a leader. He's a synagogue leader. So he has, like I said, a title. He has some position. But that doesn't really warrant God's attention. He's not a respecter of persons. And in fact, most of the interactions between Jesus Christ and religious leaders weren't good reactions. They weren't good interactions, I should say. They were, a lot of times he's scolding them or he's getting on to them about something. And so the being a ruler in the synagogue, that doesn't really warrant God's attention. Because in the same account, here's a lady that gets God's attention who isn't anything. She's just a woman who's diseased. So the ruler in the synagogue, that's not, God's not a respecter of persons. That doesn't warrant an approach. That's not an approach to God that really gets results. Consider this, you know, Jesus Christ, he's cured diseases up until And this is what Luke's recording all through this ministry of Jesus Christ. He's not recording every single incident and every single thing that Jesus Christ does. He's making records of things that he's choosing to make records of. Jesus Christ he's cured diseases. He just calmed a storm. He cast out some devils from this homeless man. And now he's going to help this wealthy leader in a synagogue. He has power over these natural things, but getting access to that strength, getting access to the power of God, that's going to come in a certain way. Just because Jesus Christ has the ability to do these things doesn't mean the crowd has access to all of that ability. So what is it that brings Jesus Christ to a personal attention of this man and this woman? We're talking about the man right now, Jairus. It's number one, or really, it's this humble and honest faith in the power of God. To come to the Lord humbly and honestly. That means put aside all of your things that I don't know, you want to hide from the Lord, you want to hide from people, put all that stuff aside. What is it you're looking for from the Lord? What is the thing? What is it let's get all the pretense out of the way, get all the religious stuff out of the way, and I would say it like this. We see people come to church. We're all in church this morning, right? And we all come to church for different reasons, generally. There's some people come to church because, you know, there's kids involved. Sometimes they come to church because they just want to hear the Bible. That's good. Sometimes they come to church because they want you to say certain things. Sometimes they come to, there's all kinds of different reasons people come to church. When you want to get God's attention on something, put the pretense down. Put the pretense down and approach God in a humble way. Lord, I just need your help. I'm not coming to satisfy my ambitions. I'm not coming to satisfy my whatever things I've got in my mind. I just need your help. So this is what Jairus does. And I notice that it has to be humble and honest, because Jairus is a leader in the synagogue. And as you know, most of the leaders in the synagogues aren't really for Jesus Christ. So if he comes to Jesus Christ falling down on his face, begging for help, he has done away with his social status. His social status is he's a leader, he's a guide that teaches the scriptures, or he organizes the synagogue in a way for events or whatever he does. But the point is, his social class of people, they are anti-Christ. They're not with Jesus Christ. And for him to break away from that and just come to God because he needs help, that's a humble and honest approach. I don't care about my social standing. I don't care what other people think about me. I don't care what you think about me. I just need help from God. That's a humble and honest approach. And you'll find out, this is the thing that Jesus Christ teaches. It's like you do this stuff because God is your audience. And we'll explain that in just a second, but the point is, what's the approach to God that gets results in a way that the crowd is not getting results from God? This humble and honest approach. Some of you this morning may be praying prayers just in the air. And you know why they're just going in the air and bouncing off walls? Because you're not really looking for God's help. There's no humility with this. There's no abandoning my own lusts and desires and ambitions and things like that. You're not really looking. It's a religious thing. Some of you this morning, maybe you're just maybe too proud to abandon your own ideas and actually seek help from God. And consequently, here's what happens. just like the Pharisees. The Pharisees were looking for praise of men. And Jesus says, you got your reward. You got your reward. If you're looking for the praise of men, whatever they decide to give you, that's yours. If they decide to erect a statue to you, well, that's yours then. That's your honor. If they decide to throw you out, well, whatever. That's what you're looking for, is praise of men. What Christianity and what God is after is praise of God. Forget the men. Forget who you're trying to impress. Forget coming to church to make a show, to make sure the people see and all of that stuff. It's about approaching God because you need God's help. I mean, how many times do we have to read in the Bible that God gives grace to the humble? I mean that's all through the Bible. And in fact, God is so impressed with humility. There's a man named, I don't want to get too far off the deal here, but I mean, these stories over and over in the Bible, you got Ahab. Ahab is wicked king, full of pride, full of arrogance, full of ambition, all that kind of stuff. And he humbles himself, and then God responds. That's how concerned he is with somebody just being transparent, honest, and humble, and truly seeking the Lord's help. I mean, do we have to talk about how many times God says that he makes a home in a poor spirit? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Not poor in your bank account. Poor in spirit. What is poor? It's needy. I need help. And particularly, I need it from God. I don't need it from man. I don't need man's clearance on this. I need something that's beyond man. Am I saying, you know, at the end of this, you know, you come down to the altar and fall on your face like Jairus before God to get his attention? I don't know, maybe. Maybe that's the thing, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying drop all the attention seeking from others and get God's attention. Because that's who's help you want. And as long as you're not seeking God's attention, you're just seeking other people's approval, well, I mean, that's what you're going to end up with. And people are fickle. You find out people are fickle. They'll love you one day and hate you the next. So seeking out their approval is kind of hit and miss. I mean, in your lifetime, how many heroes have you seen fallen? How many people have you found out, oh, this was going on in their life? The point is, you seek approval from men. We're all just complicated and fickle people. Jairus understands, I need help from God, and it doesn't matter my social standing. I'm not trying to impress the people I work with. I'm not trying to impress the people around me. I need help from God and my family. And so he comes to Jesus Christ, and this is the approach that gets Jesus Christ's attention. Unlike the crowd, because the crowd's not like that. The crowd's there for the popularity. They want to be seen with Jesus. He's kind of a celebrity. And so that's what the crowd's doing. And consequently, that's what they're getting from it. Point is, an approach to God that gets results is a humble and honest approach. Now, while Jairus has got Jesus Christ's attention, and over in Mark really explains a lot of this. But as Mark describes the situation where Jairus gets Jesus Christ's attention, the Lord starts to go to Jairus' house. He starts walking with him. And then the crowd is just mobbing Jesus. And while all this is happening, you got a lady who grabs onto Jesus. Jesus turns around, who touched me, all that kind of thing, which we'll talk about next week. But while all this is happening, one of Jairus's people that works for him there at his house comes to Jairus and tells him, your daughter is dead. There's nothing to do now. You just don't trouble Jesus anymore. I mean, look, and I'm sure he kind of pulled him aside, and he didn't want to make a big spectacle out of this, and told Jairus, hey, your daughter just passed, and, you know, I'm terribly sorry, but Jesus isn't going to be able to help you here. And I can just see Jairus sort of maybe find a spot to sit down. Maybe think about what's going on. Try to process this. That his only daughter, not even a teenager yet, is dead. And he tries to process this situation. There's a temptation in all of this to despair. And if you want your faith tried, which you don't, by the way, and no one does, just wait till there's a moment in your life where you stop being heard. Where people stop listening to you. Where people aren't the audience anymore. Just wait. Just imagine. You imagine Jairus. He's trying to get Jesus to his house to rescue his daughter. And in the process of this crowd and all this stuff going on, his daughter dies. And I imagine in his mind, it's kind of like Mary and Martha, if you had been here, she wouldn't have died. So his voice is just lost in the crowd. And in the process of this whole thing, his daughter dies. And he thinks, man, if you would have just responded earlier, if you would have just continued following me, none of this wouldn't have happened. So imagine he goes and sits down and just, there's a temptation to despair. But you want your faith tried, and again, you don't. But here's how it's going to be tried. When your voice stops being heard by people, and whether it's the noise of the crowd that drowns it out or the power of the circumstance and situation that drowns out your voice, when you stop being heard, when you're made insignificant, I mean, Jairus has been made insignificant to the crowd. His problems, his needs, drowned out in all the hustle and bustle of what's going on. That's a trial of faith. At some point in your life, it'll be just you and the Lord, and you'll find you don't think the Lord's listening anymore. Not only is nobody listening to you, you don't even think God's listening to you anymore. And some tragedy happens, something bad happens, and you're trying to find somebody that will hear your voice. That's a trial of faith. Truly then, that'll be faith. When I stop being heard by people, and I don't even think I'm heard by God anymore. Now, let's see, do you really believe that God is able to help and going to help? Because that's, at that point in time, the only audience is God. And he seems to be distracted by other things. So what does the Lord say? This is the temptation to despair. The Lord, when he hears this news, he addresses it, and he looks at Jairus, and he says, don't worry, I'm going to take care of this. Essentially, I'm just putting it in, this is what you would say. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of this. That's the response to faithfulness. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of this. Faith in this situation, this is the trial of faith for Jairus. It is one-on-one with God, and kind of along the lines with what we just talked about, approaching God. The thing that God is trying to get out of you and me is a humble approach that seeks God as our only audience. Paul would say it this way, just a few simple words. He would say, God is my witness. God is my witness. Meaning when no one else sees what's going on, no one else is going to listen, I'm going to choose to be kind because God is my witness. I'm going to choose to love because God is my witness. Not because it's going to get me my way, not because it's going to make everything work out, not because I'm going to get what I want at the end of this. I'm going to do right because God is my witness. Jesus said it this way when he started preaching. Matthew records it. He says, and I've said it a few times now, but you've got to drive this stuff home. He talked about prayer, and he says, look, these religious leaders, they put on all their clothing and all that kind of stuff, and they stand up in front of people, and they pray to be heard of people. I say a prayer because I want you to hear my prayer. And Jesus says, well, you know, they have their reward. The people hear the prayer and they do what they're going to do with it. But when you pray, go in your closet and you pray secretly to the Father, making God your only audience. He's your only audience. And he which hears in secret, he'll reward you openly. You know what that is? That's a trial of the heart. That tests your motives. What are you doing this for? You're doing this to be heard of God. You're doing this to be seen of men. Jairus is past that point, and he has had his faith tried now. Jesus would say it this way, a few things he says. He talks about prayer. Then he talks about fasting. If you're going to fast, don't tell everybody you're going to fast. Look at me. Look how spiritual I am. I'm going to skip a meal, and God's going to bless me. No, just go about your day and you fast to the Lord. Why? Because he's the audience. If you want help from him, make him the audience. Quit making the people around you the audience. He says, if you give, don't tell everybody what you're doing, especially if it's a big number, especially if it's a small number. Point is, make God the audience. If you're truly seeking help from God, make him the audience. Go in your closet and pray. Do this fasting by yourself between you and the Lord, and don't let anybody know you're doing it. And he which sees in secret, it rewards you openly. Paul would say in Romans chapter 2, he talked about every man judged by his works, they were done in secret. And things like that, the secret things. This is secret things can be good, secret things can be bad. The point is, if it's secret, God's the audience with it. Make God the audience if you want help from the Lord. Back to this Jairus' situation here. He finds out his daughter's dead. There's this temptation to despair. The Lord reassures Jairus, don't worry, I'm going to take care of this. Maybe that's where you are today. You feel like giving up because you're not being heard. And the point is, stop making your kids, fellow Christians, your friends, your wife, your husband, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, stop making them the audience. They're not going to help you like God can help. You want some help from the Lord? Well, direct all of your things to the Lord. Seek help from him. Start making the Lord your audience. Like I said, be kind because God's watching. Love because God's watching. Control your temper because God's watching. That's the idea. That's Christianity. That's what it is. So after Jairus hears this terrible news, then he's reassured by the Lord. Jesus says, basically, don't worry, I'll take care of this. I'm gonna fix this. Then he gets to the house. He gets to the house, and they've already got, and I don't know how much time has gone on between the Jairus finding Jesus and then getting home. But he gets to the house, and there's already apparently ministers and funeral director and people. They're already planning the funeral events and things like that. They've got people lamenting and singing laments and things like that. And I'd say in some of these Eastern cultures, it's very death is a very, it's, I don't want to say celebrated, but it's these events can go on for days in some of these cultures. So all these people are at the house, at Jairus' house, and they're lamenting and they're preparing and all that kind of thing. And Jesus walks in the door and he essentially says, y'all, quit grieving. She's not dead. Or quit grieving, she's asleep. And they all sort of just, I don't know if it's, you know how you feel when someone tries to give someone else false hope? I think that's how the feeling was. And they kind of pulled Jesus aside and say, hey, she's dead. This little girl is dead. I mean, don't give the family false hope and say stuff like this. And so the Lord immediately puts out the crowd. Just get out of the house. I'm not going to deal with the scoffers. And it's just Peter, James, John, Mom, Dad. Only the faithful, here's the point. Only the faithful get to see this life overcoming death. And when Jesus arrives at the Jairus' house, all these professional mourners there, he puts them all out because they don't believe that he's capable of fixing this. And he's tried to do this in the nicest fashion possible. Hey, y'all, she's just sleeping. And they get on to him about it. No, 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 she's dead. Don't give the family false hope. And he says, all right, everybody out. Everybody out. It's Peter, James, John, Mom, and Dad. Why? Because these are the people that believe he can actually do something about this. So they're going to get to witness life over death. He gathers them around, and it's incredible. After he puts everybody out, you know, this reality that the Spirit of God, and the Spirit really is superior, far superior to the flesh. You'll see that over and over, and it's one of the fundamental principles of Christianity. Proverbs talks about the spirit of man will sustain him where the flesh is weak. And that's true. You ever seen somebody with resilience and just push through stuff? That's a spiritual matter. Where the flesh is basically giving up, but the spirit is just driving and pushing. Jesus would tell the disciples in the garden, he would say, watch and pray. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So don't put all your eggs in that basket. And the flesh is weak. And the flesh eventually it dies. It's corrupt. That's one of those principles in Christianity. The spirit is far superior than the flesh. And actually, death is not, it's not really an obstacle to the spirit like it is to the flesh. So Jesus Christ, knowing all this, Paul would say Jesus Christ is he's a quickening spirit. He is a man, but he came as a quickening spirit. He would say to the woman at the well, God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. So Jesus Christ brings in the faithful. The only ones who get to see this are the faithful. And listen carefully. Here it is. Faith isn't the thing that raises the dead. I know some people teach that. You know, if you just have enough faith, then that's what fixes it. Faith doesn't fix it. Jesus Christ raises the dead. Faith is your access to that ability. Faith is your access to Jesus Christ, who has the ability, and like Jesus says, I am the resurrection, I am the life. It's not your faith that overcomes disease or overcomes death in this situation, in any situation. Faith is the thing that gives you access to the one who has the power over all of this stuff. By faith, you have access to Jesus who raises the dead. He said, I love it, in John, he says it when Lazarus dies, Mary and Martha, they're talking about the resurrection. And in their minds, the resurrection is this day on a calendar. You know, some day in the future, and then, you know, that when that happens, then they say we know that Lazarus is going to come up. We know that. But if you would have been here, he wouldn't have ever died. And they say, we understand. And Jesus says, well, Lazarus is going to live. And I think it's Mary, one of the Mary and Martha says, yeah, we understand he's going to come up in the resurrection. And then Jesus corrects them. The resurrection isn't a date on a calendar. He corrects them and says, I am the resurrection. I am the life. You want access to life? That comes by faith. That comes by getting God's attention. You want God's personal attention in this? That's faith. I say this because some folks teach this stuff, that if you're if things aren't happening, it's because of a lack of faith, or, you know, you should be able to go as far as raise the dead, which I don't know, talk about diseases and stuff like that. But they always tie it, it seems like, to faith. Faith is not the thing that does this. Jesus Christ, by the power of the Spirit of God, is the one that overcomes the flesh. And your access to that among the crowd is by a humble and honest faith. That's how you have access to this power. That's how you have access to someone who can raise the dead. Someone who walked out of a tomb. Only the faithful, after Jesus puts out everybody, only the faithful get to see this life overcoming death. And so he takes the little girl by her hand, and he says, little lady, get up. And she gets up. And I imagine through all of this sickness she's had, she probably hasn't eaten in a long time. And so he says, go get her something to eat. Which is really neat. It shows you that the resurrection is not a spiritual, it's not a resurrection of a spirit. It's the resurrection of a body. Just like after the resurrection, Jesus Christ is found on a beach and he's cooking fish. And you know what he's doing? He's eating fish. Showing you, hey, a spirit doesn't have flesh and bones like you see me have. The resurrection, it's physical, but it's by a spiritual power. It has to be something beyond the flesh because, I mean, the flesh is dead. And so you see things like this after the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He goes and eats. After this little girl, he says, go get her something to eat. Power of the Spirit over the body. Incredible. And then he says something that I don't think I fully understand. But with just those five people in the room, besides the little girl and himself, with those five people in the room, Peter, James, John, mom and dad, after she raises from the dead, they get her something to eat. He tells all of them, don't tell anybody what you've seen. Now, why would you say that? Why would you, after, you know, you just cast out devils from this man just a few verses before, and you told him, go tell everybody. But now this, I'll give you one thought on it. I don't know exactly why he says this, but it does reveal something about the character of God that's very good to know. I think when I read that, it's similar to some of the other times where he says, my time's not yet here. And this resurrection is going to get me in more trouble than I'm willing to be put in right now. He says that in John, where he says, I'm not going to go to the feast right now. It's not my time. Meaning he knows if he goes into Jerusalem, he's going to be arrested. Jerusalem is the heart of the beast. This is where the prophets go to die. So he tells him, don't tell anybody what's happened. You understand, just like you would make God your audience in life, now God has made this man his audience and his family his audience. And so this miracle is not for public consumption. It's for his family. That's who it's for. It's not for everybody. It's for Jairus, his wife, and his child. Incredible. That you have such a personal God that he would do something like that at the risk of his own ministry and do something like that and then say at the end of it, just keep this quiet. That is incredible. You know, in a lot of other religions, gods are, they're not personal beings. They're just these things that, you know, they have these powers. But in Christianity, God is personal. He's personal. And in this case, very personal. This shows the incredible compassion. And I don't want you to go I don't want any of us to go into the ditch that says that, yeah, God's doing everything for me. He doesn't do that. But he is personal. And he does attend to personal matters that approach him in a faithful way and in a humble way that need his help. The Lord is personal. He favors the faithful. He hears the specific prayers of his people. And in the midst of all this crowd and noise and all this stuff, Jairus and his wife get to witness the resurrection of their daughter, their only daughter, 12 years old. And the way Jairus... you guys just keep this to yourself. What an incredibly personal, compassionate God. Incredible. As Sam comes and plays, let's think about some of these things. I want you to get the character of Jesus Christ, God manifest in the flesh. You think about the power of God. How do you approach this? How do you get access to this? How does this work? Well, it's not your faith that raises the dead. It's not your faith that overcomes that. I mean, it's not the faith. It's Jesus Christ. And access to Jesus Christ comes by faith. That's how it works. And God is an incredibly compassionate, personal God. You want his help? Make him the audience. You want his help? Seek him by faith and humble and honest approach. Sam plays, you guys can bow your heads, close your eyes. Think about these things. Think about the character of God. Maybe you got some needs this morning. Maybe you don't feel heard. Tell you what, that's a trial. Nobody's listening. Sometimes you don't even think God's listening. He is. And there's a way to approach him. And there's a way to get his help. right, if you're done praying, you guys can look up here. We're going to wrap this up with a song. What do you got, Ben?
100, page 100, one. Day by day. Day by day, and with each passing moment, strength I find to meet my trials here. Trusting in my Father's wise bestowment, I've no cause for worry or for fear. He whose heart is kind beyond measure gives unto